Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. And once again, thank you for taking out time in your busy life to join me on the broadcast. Got a very special program for you today. At the 10 o'clock hour, I have a good friend who has always been faithful to be my guest when I've called her. And she is going to share with you her Stop Islamization Tour and many other things that are going on in her life. And, of course, I'm talking about my good friend, Iranian-American friend, Annie Cyrus. And she is the National Director of the American Truth Project, Live Up to Freedom, and she has been very, very busy these past couple of years being on tour all over the United States, standing up for our freedoms, speaking out against Sharia law. It's always a pleasure to have her, and at the 10 o'clock hour, we will talk about what she is doing here recently and lots of other good things. You'll definitely want to stay tuned for that as well. Today is Monday, August 20th, 2018. Can you believe how quickly this hot summer has passed us by? And unbelievable, in just a month, the official start of fall. Wow. Let me tell you, I am not a fan of the fall because it's the cold and flu season that kills all of us. And I work in a hospital, so I am surrounded by people that are sick, and it is so busy at this time of year. But I have a little help this year. I started a year ago taking something called Emergency. It's 1,000 grams of vitamin C in a package. You put it in a little drink, stir it up, and it helps boost your immune system. And I noticed some differences when I took it from last year. So I am determined to have a fortress or a firewall against all of this sickness and disease that all of us face in the fall season. So I'm prepared, doing the best I can. Today on The Cross in the Desert, I want to feature some selections from my new book, Broken Yet Beautiful, Rising Up from Their Ashes. I want to feature the writings of my dear Iranian friend, Manoush Bakhtiari, who is living in Sweden, who is awaiting a very important interview in about a month to determine her residency there. Many Iranians go to Sweden, and also many Iranians are deported back to Iran. And the Swedish government is very particular. They have a right to do that as an immigration system. They do have the right to choose who will stay in their country. I understand that. But a lot of Iranians who face very life and death consequences have been deported back to Iran. It seems they make a lot of room for the Syrians and the Muslims, but it seems like with the Iranians, they are very particular. So I really ask for your prayers for my friend Manoush, as she faces a very important interview in about a month with her lawyer. One of the things that is on her side, and very importantly on her side, is the fact that she is a human rights activist. As a human rights activist, about 6 months ago, we got together and I asked her to write for this program. And she has written some excellent articles on human rights in Iran for this program that I've read to you. And also I featured them in my Cross in the Desert blogs. Just a couple of months ago, she joined me in the writing project of my newest book. All of these things that she has done makes her case stronger. Her lawyer even mentioned that the fact that she helped write a book with me, that she writes for my program, will help strengthen her case in this way. And the Swedish Immigration Board will notice that she is a marked Iranian woman if she were to be sent back to Iran with all of the things she's doing to stand up against this government by writing, by blogging, by contributing to a book. It would put her life in grave danger. And this is a strength for her case. Another strength for her case is that she became a Christian several months ago. And so therefore, it's even more incumbent upon the Swedish Immigration Board to provide a safe haven for her. And this is very, very important. I know with the ban on Iranians here that there is a clause in this ban that if Iranians want to come here that are in grave danger, that are Christians, that their life is marked by human rights campaigns, and that if they stay much longer in Iran, they can be killed. Clause in our immigration policy that they are first on the list to be admitted when the ban is lifted. So there are things that can be done for Iranians, and I've been doing this with my friend Manoush for several months now, and doing my best to support her so that she can stay in Sweden where it's safe. And she has a good Iranian family there that she's living with and she will be working with. And so this is my prayer that you join me in praying for her as well. Just last week as well, the world was shocked. Many Iranian human rights activists were rightly shocked when they discovered that the Iranian regime, in their desperation with the sanctions heavy on them and the economy plundering and the protests day and night happening there, they decided that the only way they can enrich their situation is to sell the Caspian Sea. Many of my human rights activists were appalled that they, representing the Iranian people, would dare to take away the treasures of this Persian land and sell them to Russia. So when my friend Manoush heard about this, she decided, I have got to write something about this. And what she has done in a few paragraphs is put together a personal letter of an Iranian person standing in front of the regime and speaking to them and criticizing them for what they are doing. So I want you to hear, in her own words, this horrible selling of the Caspian Sea. And this is what Manoush has written. More imprudent than ever, the Iranian regime is now selling national wealth and separating out this ancient land. Apparently, the fragile support from Russia and China has been capable of convincing the Iranian regime to undergo any possible thing. In the north, the regime shamefully let Russia have the Caspian Sea and China have the Persian Gulf in the south. Now is the time that you, all Iranians, wake up to see and hear well enough the way your land, famous for thousands of years of poetry, literature, and civilization, is being ruined by a bunch of mullah-oriented Arabs. It is apparent that selling Iranian girls to Arab sheiks, letting the neighboring countries have our own electricity and natural gas, and also having our lands, wealth, and capital plundered by hired agents of Russia, Palestine, Hamas, Iraq, Yemen, Syria, have not sufficed. And now the regime has started to let them have our own lands and seas. You, the Iranian nation, you be aware that every moment of your silence against the regime's imprudence equals to letting our deceitful neighboring countries plunder our lands' possessions. During all the recent years, these countries have done their best to benefit from Iran as much as possible. You only need to review the dark history of all these 40 years to see how countries like Russia managed to plunder our seas, gold and silver mines, as well as oil wells in countries like Palestine, Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria, succeeded to reconstruct their lands and build hospitals, highways, and new complexes, and Arab sheikhs benefit from Iranian girls at bars while feasting and drinking in bed. Rise up, young generation, and even you, the old generation, who blindly fought against the Shah 40 years ago and came to the streets to protest with guns, seeking free water, electricity, and food. Rise up, brave Kurds. All these 40 years, you have just kept silent and have been the first targets of the regime's group capital punishments or assassination. Don't let the Islamic regime ruin your land more than this. Unsurprisingly, in the near future, they may leave selling Iran's lands and seas and start to sell your own possessions and wives and daughters. Don't let the history and civilization of Iran get plundered and ruined so easily that every country feels able to take a chance separating any part of the land or sea of the country, which actually belongs to every one of the Iranian people. Let's get united and put an end to the Islamic revolution of mullahs and take back our country. Powerful, powerful plea to the Iranian people to rise up. And you know they have been. Starting back in December of last year, they rose up for a couple of months, then went into hiding, and they're back up again. The truck strike continues. The economy continues to plunder. This administration is behind the Iranian people. President Trump, Mike Pompeo, the State Department are rallying the Iranian people to continue their uprising as the sanctions continue to weaken and the Iranian regime begins to crumble. You will see, I believe, in this next year, which is the 40th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution, I believe we're going to see a new democratic free government. The Iranian people, after 40 years, will finally, I believe, see freedom. I want to take us now to the book that I just completed that is available on Amazon in both paperback and Kindle, Broken Yet Beautiful, Rising Up from Their Ashes. The substance of this book is supportive of women to be pastors and leaders in the church instead of being discriminated against by gender abuse and have the Bible used against them to say they can't do that role in the church. This book is supportive of women in the church, but it's also a book that contains a section called In the Name of Religion that talks about the religious abuse against women since the dawn of time. And in one particular section, my friend Manoush helped contribute writing about the Islamic oppression of women. And I wanted to take some time this morning to just feature that section of the book, In the Name of Religion, and let you hear my friend and her research and what she has done to really give an example to the readers of this book, the oppression of Islam against women. And so I want to take some time and read word for word to you this section, Islam and the Treatment of Women. You're going to hear much more from my guest, Annie. But I wanted you to hear from my book, Broken Yet Beautiful, Section 2, In the Name of Religion. The average Muslim woman lives under the oppressive dictatorship of her husband and father. In many majority Muslim countries, they are the victims of forced marriages under a patriarchal society and are considered second-class citizens. A Muslim woman is the property of her husband and must submit to his constant sexual desires. The Muslim man, according to the Quran, may have up to four wives, quote, "then marry those that please you of other women, two or three or four," Surah chapter 4, verse 3. It is noteworthy to point out that Muhammad and his followers had numerous women slaves to feed their sexual desires, and the women had no choice in the matter. In Hadith 460, a collection of the authentic sayings of the Prophet compiled by Al-Bukhari, it says, quote, "If a husband calls his wife to bed to have sexual relations, and she refuses and causes him to sleep in anger, the angels will curse her until morning." Today, the prevalence of polygamy is considered appropriate for Muslim men according to the Prophet's traditions. Now, Islamic historians are quick to rush to the aid of Muhammad, defending his numerous marriages. He had 11 wives, to be exact, even though the Quran only allows for up to four. Social and political circumstances are the excuses given for his many marriages. After the death of his wife Khadijah in 619 and his arrival in Medina, Muhammad began to engage in the practice of polygamy. Muhammad was 54 when he married Abu Bakr's daughter Aisha when she was only 6 years old, and then consummated the marriage when she turned 9. The marriage to Aisha at the tender and innocent age of just 6 years old began the tradition in Islam of child marriage. Muslim apologists try to defend this practice, pointing out that the girl's puberty and menstruation began at 9, and then they are legally able to marry. It is apparent that a woman in Islam is little more than a sexual slave to feed the appetite of men. In a speech given by Imam Al-Janari Bahagar, women are chided for being inferior to the intelligence of a man, and I quote, "Beware, women's faith is incomplete since they are deprived of saying prayers and fasting through menstruation. Since in Islam, two women witnesses equal one man's witness, a woman's mind is also considered imperfect. Furthermore, a woman's share of inheritance is half a man's," end quote. The Quran portrays the man as having a superior mind, allowing him to dominate a woman. That is why woman is regarded as his inferior, an obedient fellow being. Otherwise, man is permitted to turn harsh and punish her in different ways, of which hitting is one. And, of course, that is Quran chapter 4, verse 34. Muhammad added his commentary to this command as given in the Quran, Surah chapter 4, verse 34. "A man will not be asked as to why he beat his wife." Just because you're very suspicious of my writing, I want to give you the quote. You can look it up yourself. Sunan Abu Dawood, Hadith 2142. A respectful woman in the Islamic view is the one who obeys men, as recorded by Sunan Abu Dawood in Hadith 3558. Quote, "A woman should not spend anything from her house except with the permission of her husband." There are grievous consequences in Islam for a woman who is accused of adultery. All adulterous women in both Shia and Sunni traditions are sentenced to death by stoning. The graphic film, The Stoning of Saraya, depicted the true story of Saraya Manoorchi in Iran, whose husband concocts a false rumor that she has been unfaithful, so she will be executed, and then he can marry a 10-year-old girl. The harsh and degrading view of women in Islam carries over into war, where women are considered booty and prized possession as slaves. Quote, have any woman taken as a prize of war, since they are all blessings of God, as such is any woman who surrenders to you, you are asked to marry her, as this is an exclusive order. Al-Azab Surah 33:50. Thus, Islam allows men to possess women other than their legal wives and impose on them their sexual exploitations. Slavery is approved of by both the Quran and Hadith and was practiced by the Prophet. Perhaps one of the clearest evidences of the inequality between men and women in the teachings of Islam is found in the vision that Muhammad had of women suffering in hell. Hadith 161 records the words of the Prophet saying, quote, I saw the hellfire, and I had never seen such a terrible sight. I saw that most of the inhabitants were women. Now, here is a list of the points that are gleaned from this so-called vision of Muhammad. Then my eyes caught the glimpse of a woman hanging from her hair. She apparently had not attempted to cover her hair fully in her life. A woman who had not obeyed her husband was hanged from her breast, and the one who had hurt her husband by her tongue was hanged from her tongue accordingly. And the woman who had the head of a pig and the body of a donkey was a back-biting liar. And then there was a woman in the shape of a dog whose mouth and nostrils exhaled flames. She was a jealous singer. In the end, he said, heaven save us from the woman whose husband is not satisfied with her, and good for the one whose husband is satisfied. The vision Muhammad had is frightening, since he observed, quote, that the majority of its dwellers were women. This is a grave accusation that women go to hell more than men, thus concluding that women are more prone to sin than men. In general, one hadith states that the Prophet believed that, quote, whichever woman dies while her husband is pleased with her, then she enters paradise. Jami at Tamhidi, Hadith 1161. This gives you a glimpse into the life of a woman in Islam. Now, you may know Muslim couples that don't treat each other that way. I'm not saying there is not exceptions. There are. But this is a total Quranic implementation of Sharia law against a woman. She's little more than a sex slave and a possession. She is a second-class citizen. This is the view of Islam that is protected by our media. Our media, in its political correctness and its fear of Islamophobia, refuses to unveil the teaching of women in Islam from this source that I just quoted you. Their own Quran belittles women. I've heard from even some of my Muslim friends that there is such equality in marriage, that Muhammad was this great champion of women's rights. And again, you need to understand that most Muslims don't even know their Quran, don't even know their history. They have not attempted to discover what it teaches. But once they do, once they understand what it is, they will certainly flee. I wanted to share with you in conclusion before Annie comes on, something I wrote in this book about how false religion belittles people. And it comes from a story of my Iranian friend, and she is a wonderful about sharing things to me. Her name is Atafi. She lives in Tehran. And she shared a story about some Iranian security officers who came to a clothing store right before Nowruz. And they cited the store owner and were threatening to arrest her because she did not put hijabs on all of the mannequins in the stores. It is Islamic law for all women to wear a veil when they go out publicly. If they fail to comply, they can be fined, arrested, or lashed. But wait a minute. Help me out, please. Is there not a distinction between human beings and mannequins? What is a mannequin? A mannequin is a lifeless form of plastic representing a human being that is used to display the latest fashion in store windows. Oh, I get it now. The Islamic regime would prefer that all Iranian women behave just like mannequins. Mannequins don't speak or talk back or protest or whine or complain. These lifeless plastic forms wear whatever you put on them without a complaint and stand in the window all day. The sad reality to this images everything scenario is that it reduces real human beings to lifeless forms without hearts and souls. Human beings cannot exist under these conditions. They quickly lose all self-worth and self-esteem, and that's exactly what false religion does. It robs people of all meaning and purpose in life and reduces them to little more than puppets on a string. God didn't create us as lifeless forms or puppets on a string. He created you and me with great value and gave us a heart to discover the beauty of life that surrounds us. He breathed into our souls love, purpose, and creativity to shine like the brilliant colors of the rainbow and to make a difference in a world of suffering and pain. Our lives won't shine very brightly if we are reduced to the morbid and depressing existence of mannequins in a store window. Let me just say this to you in conclusion. God offers true hope and healing for both Iranian and Saudi women. The Bible teaches that he hears the cry of the oppressed and rescues them. And you know, I've spent the last 7 years of my life writing the stories of my dear Iranian friends and being their voice. And I believe one day soon we will be able to walk down the streets of Tehran without fear of being arrested. I also believe God is going to bring justice and freedom to the women of Saudi Arabia. I can say this with confidence because the Bible teaches God is a God of justice. This one precious psalm guides my prayers and thoughts of my Iranian friends all day. He will rescue the poor when they cry to him. He will help the oppressed who have no one to defend them. He feels pity for the weak and the needy, and he will rescue them. He will redeem them from oppression and violence because their lives are precious to him. Psalm 72, verses 12 through 14. What a powerful promise from God's holy word. God understands their pain because he became a human being in Jesus and suffered excruciating pain in order to save us from our sins. Jesus was spit upon, mocked, insulted, and betrayed. He understands evil and betrayal because he experienced all of them. The women of the Middle East are leaving Islam every day because they have found a God who understands their pain and suffering. Jesus is that God. He is not a distant deity, far away, disconnected from our pain, but a God who is both our refuge and strength and our ever-present help in time of need. This is from my latest book, Broken Yet Beautiful, Rising Up from Their Ashes. The section I'm reading from is In the Name of Religion. That section is dedicated to my Iranian friends and my friends in Saudi Arabia. And I want to just say again, the greatest good news that I received almost 2 weeks ago was my friend Amna, who was released from prison in Saudi Arabia. She is now at an undisclosed location. But my book is dedicated to her. I told her story in my book, and the result of many, many heartfelt prayers is the result of her freedom. And I'm so grateful. She still is a prisoner living in Saudi Arabia, but she's out of the prison that has been guilty of abusing many of the Saudi women. And so I'm very thankful once again for that good news, which happened on the very day that this new book was published in paperback. So what a wonderful thing. I want to welcome right now to the Cross in the Desert one of my heroes, and her name is Ani Cyrus. She is the national director of the American Truth Project and Live Up to Freedom. She has been a frequent guest, and I want to welcome you, Annie, to the Cross in the Desert, and good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Randy.
So thankful that you are able to attend this morning and to be a guest on my program. And I've been talking for the last 20 minutes about Islam and the treatment of women, and you know very well all about that, because in Iran you were the victim of a child bride marriage. And thankfully you were able to escape here and become a citizen here. And you have been busy most of the time you've lived here in being a voice for women who are suffering under Sharia law. You've got quite a story, and you have a lot of energy in speaking the truth to the media that won't tell us the truth. So tell us, Annie, about the Stop Islamization tour that you've been a part of all of this year.
Absolutely. Well, as you said, I call myself a former child bride, being born and raised in the Islamic Republic of Iran. And when I did find my way out and finally was free in America, I started doing some activism, kind of underground, not too loud, until 3 years ago when I reached a bigger audience and was able to be a little louder. A year after that, starting 2017, I started going on tour all across America, and some of them in Canada also, where I tell people my story. I tell them where I come from and what I suffered, and I also tell them what Islam teaches when it comes to especially women's rights, and how a little kid, little girl can count as a woman at age 9, which is a very crucial point for everyone to know. Because every time I talk about being a woman under Sharia, everybody thinks of the free America, which is you are over 18 and you're an adult. But in Islam, well, technically you're 9 and you're a woman. Thankfully, the tours started picking up. So for 2018, so far, we have done 28 events, which I'm very happy and proud. And the next one coming up is actually this weekend, August 25th, Saturday, in Jefferson City, Missouri, where it's technically it is a Second Amendment rally, but we are going to cover how Islamization of America is affecting this movement of the left on taking away our guns and Second Amendment, our rights, basically. So that would be my part on that rally, to mention and teach people why the Islamization has a huge effect on what is going on in our country today.
You're coming to my backyard. I hope to see you with my wife, Becky. You're going to be at the nation's the capital of Missouri, Jefferson City, August 25th, this weekend, as you mentioned, from 2 to 5 p.m. You mentioned it's a Second Amendment right, rally for those people, all of us, the right to keep and bear our arms and not to be infringed. And it's going to be quite an event. You're going to be speaking there. But, Annie, the thing that you're doing is so impressive because – you are sharing the truth that the media refuses to share. To give an example, Keith Ellison, running for attorney general in Minnesota, was accused of abusing his girlfriend, and the media don't want to talk about this. They want to shut it down because he is a Democrat, he is a leftist, and we don't want to say anything wrong against Muslims. But in response to that, you are working with American Truth Project, and you're exposing what's really going on with Keith Ellison and many other Muslims who are infiltrating our government.
Absolutely. And that was a great point you just brought up. One thing, as you said, yes, at the moment, starting 2 weeks ago, it's a still ongoing project we're doing at the American Truth Project. And just a quick note for your listeners, if you want to keep up with our coverage, you can go to americantruthproject.org. We literally post daily videos, articles, reports, and everything that we can get our hands on. But as you mentioned, yes, Keith Ellison is a Democrat. Keith Ellison is a leftist. But the key point is Keith Ellison is a Muslim. Now, I have the right to say that because the very first time, back in the time when he was elected, he was running his campaign saying, if I'm elected, I will be the first Muslim to be elected. So he has started this labeling campaign. So when I say he's a Muslim, it's not about race. It's not about my hate for Muslims, because I don't hate Muslims. I hate Islam. But he won every campaign by using his Muslim card. And what people need to realize is a combination, an unholy alliance of a leftist plus a Muslim, that is the biggest danger we can face as Americans.
This gets into the whole idea about Muslims. How can they put their hand on a Bible and swear to uphold the Constitution when they are a real defender of Sharia law and Islamic theology? There is another person that's also running there, Ihan Amor. And she's trying to become the first Somali American in Congress, and she wants to take away the seat that Keith Ellison is vacating. We see Muslims getting active in our government. How can they do that, Ani, and swear to uphold the Constitution? Because the Constitution and Sharia law are at complete odds with each other.
Well, the first thing is, technically, if you look at any of their ceremonies, they don't put their hands on Bible. They put their hands on Quran. And that's the key ingredient of this problem. We actually recently, again, at ATP, American Truth Project, we did a video with Barry Nussbaum, the founder and CEO of the organization. We covered this. The problem is they don't actually swear on Bible. They swear on Quran, and what they say is they will uphold the Constitution. Now, the Quran is the Constitution of Islam. Mm-hmm. When it comes down to it, they are not going to uphold our Constitution, not the American Constitution, but their Islamic Constitution, which is Quran, which is, it goes against every single belief, every single value that we live by here in America. The First Amendment doesn't exist. Second Amendment doesn't exist. None of our amendments exist in Quran. And I brought up, again, if they want, they can watch the video. It's on our YouTube channel, on our website. The point is, yes, there is a hadith. Yes, in Quran it says you have to follow the law of the land until it goes against Sharia. If it does, then you pick Sharia. They are right. They're not lying when they say they're obligated to follow the law of the land. However, the piece they forget to mention is until it goes against our beliefs. And everything we have here in America goes against their beliefs. So technically, they will have, it will come down to where they have to pick and choose, and they will be obligated to pick Sharia over our Constitution.
Yeah, some troubling things about these Muslim candidates. I was reading about Ihan Amor. She's very anti-Semitic. She's been a critic of Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, according to the CNN fake news media, that somehow Israel is mistreating the Palestinians, which is not true at all. And she is calling its government the apartheid Israeli regime in a recent tweet. She denies being anti-Semitic, but what troubles me, Annie, about these candidates is their Muslim Brotherhood sympathetic. And they're very anti-Israel. It's really troubling that they want to get involved in the government because they can sway a lot of people in their direction. They can do some things that would shut down free speech, shut down people speaking out critical of Islam. What do you think?
Honestly, I completely agree with everything you said, and I'm going to top that with another note. This is America. As of right now, we have millions of women who are screaming on top of their tongues for equal rights, which I don't agree with a single one of them because we do have equal rights. But my point is, all of these women who are so worried about equal rights of men and women are standing behind a candidate who is wearing the hijab as a symbol of oppression for women. That's my question. Where are all the feminists? Why are they not worried that a woman who stands for unequal rights, who follows a so-called religion, who is allowing her husband to beat the crap out of her if she doesn't obey him, and they're getting behind her? This should be the biggest concern in America
right
now. Why are we electing a woman who bows to her own sentence of slavery?
I think a lot of it has to do with the success of someone like Alinda Sorcerer, who rallied behind the candidate in Michigan who actually lost. He wasn't elected. There's so much identification politics going on here. We don't want to be Islamophobic. We want to rally behind Muslims. We want to treat them with kindness and fairness. We want to overlook all of the things that are oppressive to women. And really, Linda Sarsour and others are re-educating people, trying to tell them that, you know, we're not oppressive, we're not anti-woman, we're women's rights. It's very deceptive, very deceiving how they make inroads into our the thinking of feminists. And it's antithetical. Feminism and Islam is antithetical. You can't be both. But they have succeeded in brainwashing a lot of women. So it's tragic. And that's why your job is so important, to stand up and reveal that what is going on here is a tactic, a political tactic, to put Muslims in charge and to put Muslims as the majority in America. And that's very, very, very dangerous.
Here's the thing. When you bring up Linda Sarsour, but again, let's follow the money. Where did Linda Sarsour come from? Who got behind Linda Sarsour? How did this Linda Sarsour even start it? It was all from Nation of Islam. Farrokhan, mm-hmm. who is the master of Keith Allison, who is replacing himself with this new Somalian Muslim American woman. Like, it's literally, it's so, and that's, sometimes I get so frustrated and people are like, you know, you get worked up. I'm like, because it's so simple that if it would just simply sit down and stop worrying about being labeled and just look at the trace they're living, it's so easy to see what they're doing. It all comes from one place. And all they need to do is take position in our government. I always refer, I can't tell you how many times I have brought up Quran chapter 47, verse 35, says, and do not call for peace when you are superior. This is a translation from Arabic. As a person who was raised by force to learn Arabic as second mandatory language, chapter 47, verse 35 says, and do not call on peace while you are superior. That's why they need to get in the office. They need to get in so they can stop being peaceful. They can stop their taqiyya. They can stop lying to people and they can take over. Linda Sarsour will be one of the very first women who's going to be put back in her bedroom and be silenced as soon as they take power. Look at the history. I actually had this argument with a Muslim woman who showed up at one of my venues to say I'm a racist, bigoted, hateful person with a couple of bad experiences. And I told her, I said, show me in your history, 1,400 years, show me when the peace existed. It never was there.
It is conquering by the sword. It's infiltrating the mind. And you have done such good work in informing people to look deeply at these people that are claiming to represent our government, to claiming to bring peace. On your Facebook page, you did a top 10 of 10 things that should terrify you about Keith Ellison. You have all these things listed here that people need to understand. His terrifying network ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, Muslim American Society, Al-Qaeda, the 2007 Holy Land Foundation terror funding trial. You go through the whole history that these are not peaceful people, and you do that to educate people about what's really going on behind the scenes.
Yes, and you see exactly, Randy. I mean, me aside, as you said, I've been on your program many times. To be honest, actually, in all fairness, you were one of the very first conservative host who invited me when I was starting this whole, you know, movement. And I mean, just between me and you and your programs, we have given so much information to people that if they wanted to know the truth, all they had to do was like tune into one of the programs that you put up. I mean, you've been doing it. I had you on my show once and I told you, I can't tell you as an Iranian how grateful I am for you to decide to just dedicate your life to my people. I mean, you could have picked anything else to talk about, and you decide to go for people that are forgotten. I'm not kidding. Like, Iranian people are forgotten people in America. Like, because of all the, you know, not to sound racist, but because of all the madness going on in Arabic countries like Syria, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Iranian people suffer the most because they're under control of the most ruthless leaders. But they're forgotten. So as a side note, I want to repeat myself. I am so grateful to you doing what you do for my people. And also, we
and
have done so much. You have put out so many books that all people need to do is buy the book, read the book. They know what's happening to our country. But our people are so lazy, they don't even want to get educated.
Hmm. Well, it's my pleasure to serve your people. I've been doing it for many years, and you bring up the subject of the oppression of the Iranian people. I wanted to get your opinion and your view on how the Trump administration is supporting the Iranian people. Just a few weeks ago, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was in California at the Reagan Library talking to the Iranian-American community. President Trump is putting on the sanctions very tough on the Iranian regime, and he is supporting the Iranian people. I'd like for you to spend just a couple of minutes sharing your heart as an Iranian-American, your thoughts on how this administration is making a difference in your people, in the lives of your people.
Honestly, I can't tell you how happy I was. I think I actually did a live feed and cried on that live feed of happiness and joy when the sanctions were put back on. 2 years ago, I went on I don't remember who, somebody's show. I think it was Graham Ledger on OAN. And they asked me, what do you think is the solution to the problem? I said, put those sanctions back. And it will literally completely destroy the regime. So the day I finally saw that the sanctions are going back thanks to Trump administration, and honestly, I will rephrase that, thanks to President Trump, because President Trump is isolated in his own administration. I want to say Trump administration, but we don't have that at the moment. So thanks to President Trump finally having what it takes to stand up to these evil mullahs, I was so happy and so relieved, because right now my people are fighting so hard, honestly harder than ever in the last 40 years. They've been keeping up since December 27th, 2017. They've been fighting, and last thing we needed was for the regime to lose money. So it's more possible for us to get them out of our country. My motherland can be possibly free just based on this one single decision that President Trump has made. It was absolutely a gift that my people needed desperately in the last 40 years. So I'm personally extremely happy and grateful.
Yes, he is not an appeaser like Obama was. He's not giving billions of dollars to fund terrorists through the Iranian regime. And the thing that is really, really sad, though, in all of the good news you just shared, is that just a week ago, the Iranian regime sold the rights to the Caspian Sea to Russia. They are taking the prized possessions of the Iranian people, and in a desperation, they're desperate right now, they are giving away your land to the Russians. You've got to be just
Oh, my God, Randy,
enraged.
I don't know if you've seen that video or not. A video was sent to me. There is a little, I think she's 13 or 14-year-old girl crying. And the father asked her, why are you crying? And she's like literally sobbing over this very subject, that they are selling my motherland and there's nothing I can do. A 13-year-old girl in Iran is sobbing over this. That's how tired of this whole charade my people are. And by the way, just a quick note, the reason President Trump isn't like Obama is because President Trump is an actual true Christian American. That's why.
Yes.
Whereas to Obama was a Muslim practicing, opening the door to Muslim Brotherhood so they could come in and destroy America as we know it. And for that very fact, I will never change my position when it comes to Obama administration. They did a damage to our country that will take decades to repair. And the fact that, again, I am so frustrated with my fellow Americans, like, who voted for Keith Ellison? Who voted for, I'm drawing a blank on her name. What's the woman's name?
Amor. Her name is Omar.
Jan
Omar.
It's like, come on, you can't tell me all of them were Somalians. No. A huge number of Americans voted for her. Stop this madness. Wake up. Smell Islam in our country and stop it. Mm. I want to wake up to a morning. I came to this country now officially 16 years ago, and I came to this country, and I would go to work, I would go to just normal walk, and I would feel so safe. I never had to look over my shoulder worrying that they're coming for me. What happened to us? I am living in this country with 10 bounties on my head, 7 of them issued inside America. If that doesn't terrify my fellow Americans, I don't know what would.
Wow, and it was terrifying. I noticed back a few months ago, I think it was in April, you were in Michigan, and you had Antifa right there. They were opposing everything that was going on. They were opposing you, and it was very frightening to see. Plus, you had your bodyguards, thank the Lord for that, which will be with you this weekend again. But you're right. In America, the land of the free, of the home of the brave, you are receiving death threats from Americans. You are being opposed by groups like Antifa. You can't imagine that this would happen here in America, but it's happening.
I know, and that's the thing. You know, the fact that we I understand the leftists, you know, doing whatever they do. I understand because they just hate America so bad that they don't care what they're bringing in. As long as anything that would take America down, they're cool with it. But I don't understand how my fellow conservative Americans, and I normally don't bring this up, but I will do it right now. My fellow Christian Americans sitting there and telling me that they have the right to practice their religion. No, they don't, because it's not a religion. If they are going to kill you for practicing Christianity, you should not be okay with them practicing their so-called religion. If I could find a way, I was asked about 2 weeks ago, Randy, somebody asked me, as of right now, the way things are going, what do you think is the only way, like, are we looking at a civil war? I'm like, no. I mean, you know better than anyone. I'm a very peaceful person. I'm like, no, a civil war will not help us. They're like, what does? I'm like, we need to learn to wake up Sunday morning and go back to our churches. That's what will save us. They are growing numbers in their mosques and attendees, and we are losing our churches. We are losing our values. That's what they are taking advantage of. I promise you, if every single one of you, one of us, would wake up every Sunday and attend church and become one again, it would terrify them to stop and go back to their countries. I will guarantee you that. All we need to do is remember the base of our country.
Yes, we are a Christian nation. We were founded on Christian principles. And you're right, there are so many people that are lazy and afraid and won't get involved. There are more mosques than churches in the UK. Europe is being plunged into a Muslim deception. When you see, like you mentioned, churches, it was amazing to me. I shouldn't be shocked. But the building of mosques in Great Britain is overshadowing churches. Churches are closing down. So what is happening? We are the salt and the light of the earth. We have the answers for Muslims. We have the God of peace and love. Why aren't we involved? What is wrong with us?
Oh, no, we are. But here's how we are. As Christians, all you hear is we have to love everyone. For love of God, love everyone. But before you do that, why don't we start by loving ourselves? If you're going to love ourselves, we're going to value our life. This very cult is a direct danger to our life. Let's just stand up to it. And again, I want to make it clear, I'm not telling anyone to go for it, get out there and kill anyone. No. What I'm saying is let's become what we are supposed to be. We the people, united, standing for our rights. That's all I'm asking.
Well,
here's the thing. Our nature,
our
nature as humans is to believe in a higher power. So when we are not teaching our new generation, the next generation, we're not telling them, let's go to church and say a prayer, some Muslim will come and get them and tell them, our Allah will reward you for a prayer. The nature of that kid is to follow. That's another problem we're facing. We are kind of sort of becoming a little too open-minded of a society. Oh, I let my kid decide his religion. Okay, that's great. I agree completely. But why don't we introduce Christianity to our kids? If they don't want to pick it, I'm not arguing that. That's fine. But when we completely, literally, nothing exists. The churches are empty. Our homes are empty of any prayer, any sign of God. And then we expect our kids not to follow into their trap. Of course they will. Because they want to believe in a higher power.
I got what you're saying. We need to be more vigilant. We need to stand up for our rights. We need to be educated. We need to take a stand, and we need to become involved. All of the things that you are encouraging people to do. This rally this weekend is standing up for your rights, the rights of the people to bear arms and to stand up for their constitutional rights as Americans. We need to become involved. We need to put that as priority one, and that's why you're speaking at this kind of rally. You're saying, hey, there are other freedoms that can be taken away from us if we aren't standing vigilant and we don't take a stand. So I'm really happy that you're doing this rally this weekend. I hope to see you there.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. We gotta keep going. You know, there is a point. It's amazing. You know, we do our stuff on websites and Facebook and other social media, and people share, and it's awesome. But it's time for what, you know, boots on ground. We gotta get on the streets. As long as we have the power, we need to use it. It's too late to wait for them to take away our rights. I mean, I will quickly go over this. Let me just quickly tell you what Islam stands for. Freedom of speech does not exist, because if you disrespect Allah or Muhammad, you're punished by death. Freedom of press doesn't exist. You need approval from actual morality police to publish or film or produce anything. Equality of man and woman obviously don't exist, thanks to chapter 4, verse 34. Sorry, chapter 4, verse 11. Freedom of anything doesn't exist. Freedom of religion doesn't exist. You leave Islam, you're punished by death. So let's not wait for them to take away our freedom and our rights and then remember to fight them. Why do we have to? Here's the thing. Can we take the fight to them? Can we not wait until our rights are gone and then we'll rely on a civil war? Let's take the fight to them by being educated. This is an info war. This is not about guns. This is not about knives. It's not about sword. This is about information. We need to be informed. And as you said, someone like me, I am willing. I will give all the knowledge I have, all the knowledge I learned through suffering under Sharia, I will give it to every person. Let's just do it. Let's get informed. Let's get involved. And let's take action. And let's take our country back. Because at the moment, they are running our country, either we like to hear it or not.
Amen. So well said. And that's a powerful, motivating speech you just gave, and I'm hoping you're going to give that same speech this weekend. It really is always a pleasure to have you on my program, Annie, because you educate us, you motivate us, and you're the person that is going to take the fight right out to the people. And I like the way you represent us, and that you motivate us so that we need to get involved. And thank you so much for educating us today on the cross in the desert.
Absolutely my pleasure, anytime, and I look forward to seeing you Saturday.
We're going to do that. God bless you, Annie Cyrus. Thank you again for being my guest, and thank you for all that you do for the cause of freedom and educating against Sharia law. Thank you, Annie.
My pleasure.
Have a great day. And that's, you heard from Annie Cyrus, and she is very courageous. She does this out of love for freedom, out of love for people, and because she cares for all of us. She will take the fight to the front lines. I have watched her over the past year and the number of many events she has spoken at, and she does this tirelessly. It's hard on her physically and emotionally, but she is always at every event. She's always there. She's had to cancel a few because of illness, but she is determined to get the message out. The Stop Islamization Tour is a tour you want to get involved in and attend. And so I really commend the Sharia Law Stop Islamization Tour with Annie Cyrus. If you have a chance to go out this weekend to Jeff City, please go out and listen to Annie speak. It's been a pleasure to be with you today and to help you understand the fight that we're involved in. I'm going to say God bless you to my dear friend Annie Cyrus. I will see everyone on the next edition of The Cross in the Desert next Monday. God bless you.
I've seen the glory of the curse.